The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1046. It's Thursday, the 19th of April, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Colin Hutchinson, Chief Executive Officer of Ascent Resources, AST ticker there, and Colin discusses their final results and their strategic review, including the formal sale process under the Takeover Code. Also on the podcast, Keith Alorn, Chief Executive Officer of Powerhouse Energy, that's PHE ticker, and Keith talks about the appointment of a Commercial Operations Manager, their distribution agreement, and equity fundraise. Plus, I have Chris Bailey on the podcast too, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, talking about Debenhams results, Sky, Unilever, and Ultra Electronics, that's the ULE ticker. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Colin Hutchinson, CEO of Ascent Resources, that's AST ticker. Colin, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
Now, we've got two bits of news to delve into, and that's the final results for the year ended the 31st of December. And also, you announced a strategic review, including a formal sale process, which has got people's ears pricking up and asking, what's all that about then? So we'll get into that in a bit. Before we do, for new investors or someone who's not quite familiar with the company, Colin, summarise what it's all about, please.
Sure, Justin. Ascent Resources PLC, we're a name-listed oil and gas exploration and production company. Our main asset is the Petisovci field, which is in northeastern Slovenia on the border with Croatia and Hungary. We've been in country 10 years and we brought that field into production last year.
Excellent stuff. And at the top of your audited final results, you have transformational year. So take us through some of 2017's highlights, if you could, Colin.
Well, it really was. 2017 was a hugely significant year for the company, certainly since I've been there and maybe in its entire history. We brought our first two wells into production, PG-10 and PG-11A, generated revenue from them for close to €1 million. PG-10 was producing from April, test production, and then full production from November. And PG-11A came on and test in September and then produced in November and December. So production for the first time, revenue for the first time, debt has virtually been eliminated from the balance sheet. We had, a couple of years ago, we had £11 million of debt sitting there. It looked fairly ugly. At the end of 2017, it's down to, I think we've got 36,000, something like that. So virtually debt-free, generating revenue, and a fairly healthy cash balance. So the 2017 results, very good set of results, a nice-looking balance sheet. We've got revenue. And operationally, the company's producing gas from its first two wells. So 2017 was a big year, and that really sets us up then for... we were in a very strong position to grow from here. So that's going to take you on to the strategic review question.
Yeah, well, I've had a couple of people... I mean, you know, you announced this, and the share price shot up here, and it says, strategic review, including a formal sale process under the Takeover Code. And in this announcement, you say... You've decided to conduct a review of the various strategic options available to the company to maximise value for shareholders. This will include seeking both to identify a partner to work with the company and to maximise the opportunity to develop existing assets and offers for the company. So, yeah, explain. I mean, it says it there.
Explain that.
Yeah.
So, I suppose to follow on from the first point, the company, we've done the first bit, we've got the asset into production, but there's a huge amount still to do and a huge amount of growth potential left. We've only really started to scratch the surface. The independent third-party report that was done back in 2013 put the P50 gas in the ground in Petisovci at 456 BCF. That translates into a net present value of a couple of £100 million pounds. So there's a huge potential asset there. We've just started proving that up. There's a lot of other things to do within Petisovci. I've talked before about the shallow oil, that there's a quantity of oil left there in the shallow reservoirs which could be exploited. There are other things to do in Slovenia. There are other concession areas which would be interested in pursuing. And there's also rounds coming up in the near future in neighbouring countries, in Croatia and Hungary. So there's a lot of potential for the company to grow. And the strategic review is really about looking for the best way forward to maximise shareholder value. So the strategic review process allows us to consider a range of different options for how we take the company forward into phase two. And that one of those options could be the sale of a company or the combination with another company. And that's why all that language about the formal sales process has to be included in that announcement.
Okay, and so you say there that you didn't want to, you know, to exploit this potential without significant dilution for shareholders. So that's why you've gone down this route, is it?
Exactly. I mean, this just allows us to look at what the best way forward to fund the company is. We've had, obviously since we started producing, we've had a number of contacts made from companies interested in potentially partnering with us on the asset. And as a board, we were concerned that the share price was lower than we think it should be, and we didn't want to be vulnerable to an opportunistic approach. So this strategic review allows us to open up the process to as wide an audience as possible. We can have conversations with a lot of different people freely because we've announced the process, and it allows us to find the best possible outcome that maximises shareholder value, because there's undoubtedly a huge amount of value in Petisovci, and Ascent can capture a lot of value within the region as well with its contacts. So it's about making sure that that translates into value for shareholders.
So just to get it straight in my head, I mean, you would either sort of do a farm out and so that would allow you to free up funds to drill more, explore more, or look at more new assets, or would you sell the assets in Petisovci and look elsewhere as well?
Yeah, I mean, it really opens up a range of outcomes, and we've got First Energy, who are very experienced in this, providing us with guides and advice on everything. So it could be a farm in, could be something to do with it, could be a more corporate transaction. There are various potential outcomes, and we will see how it unfolds. It will take a few weeks to get sort of NDAs exchanged and all the start talking to the various parties and get them into a data room, whatever.
Yeah. So as yet, you're still going through that process of finding out which is the preferable option or the best option. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, it's going to take some time to go through these things. This isn't something that you do within a week. It's a process where we'll start to have conversations with people that are interested, and then we can assess which of those options offer the best return to shareholders, and then at some point in the future, shareholders will be able to give their opinion on it. Because this will, there'll have to be a general meeting, and things will be, they'll be able to give their view.
And like you say there, I mean, this has come about just solely because you think this will create the best value for shareholders. Is that the case?
Yes, I mean, that's the whole objective behind this, is to maximise and ensure that shareholders get the best value. The share price has obviously underperformed, given what we've achieved in 2017. I think the share price does undervalue the company. So the strategic review allows us to sort of sit back and assess what the best way forward is, and what the options are to maximise the value for shareholders.
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right, marvellous. Well, listen, if anyone is listening right now and likes the sound of this process you're going through and not following the story yet, and you say the share price is depressed at the moment, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please, Colin.
Sure, Justin. I mean, the three reasons are sent. We're producing gas, have been for a year now. We are generating cash, and we've got a huge potential to grow. We've got a significant asset in Petisovci. We've got a lot of opportunities within the region, and the board are now assessing the best way to exploit those opportunities in a way that maximises returns to shareholders.
Marvellous, Colin, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll speak again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much, fella.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Keith Alorn, CEO of Powerhouse Energy. That's PHE ticker. Keith, thanks for joining me.
You bet, Justin. It's a pleasure to be back.
Now, you've had quite a few bits of news you've released in progressing the project there a lot since we last spoke, so we'll go through bits of that. Before we do, Keith, as always, if someone's listening to this and have never heard of Powerhouse Energy, explain it, summarise them. Summarise the business, please, if you could.
Sure. Powerhouse Energy is the UK pioneer in the extraction of hydrogen from end-of-life products. So the extraction of hydrogen from end-of-life plastics, end-of-life tires, the ability to extract hydrogen from products that that were heading to landfill or to incineration, we can take that waste stream and use that as feedstock, from which we can then extract the hydrogen and do two things. One, create road fuel quality hydrogen, which is an extremely dear commodity. And we can create green electricity. And so the we're one of the few businesses that gets paid to make money. Yeah. And we're in the right place at the right time with the market drivers pointing in the right direction for the eradication of plastics, getting wet plastics out of the waste stream, which is a principal form of feedstock for us, and end-of-life tires. There being 70 million tires in the UK that reach end-of-life every single year. So there are a number of tremendous opportunities facing us in front of us here in the UK, coupled with those in the EU, in the Far East, in the United States, of course. And hydrogen fuel cell technology is continuing to grow rapidly, and the biggest impediment to the expansion of the fuel cell in use in transportation is the cost and acquisition of hydrogen. Mm-hmm. And we can produce hydrogen in an environmentally responsible, economically robust manner in a way no other company can.
Do you know what? That was one of the most comprehensive summaries I've ever heard in my life. That's excellent. Yeah. So, all right. Well, listen, you are, you know, sort of pioneering quite a cutting edge technology with the DMG there. And you've gone from research and development, but now you say you are heading towards commercialization. And I suppose nothing underlines this more than the fact that you've appointed a commercial operations manager, and that was done on the 10th of April. So take us through the detail here, if you could, Keith.
Yeah, we were fortunate enough to be able to identify Bruce Nicholson to join our team as the commercial operations manager. Bruce brings 25 years of successful energy project development, successful business development, and successful project management to the team, and really helps us raise our game. So when we start looking at the contribution of Bruce, coupled with the contribution of our CFO, coupled with the contribution of our technical director, coupled with me, coupled with our burgeoning growing board, our new chairman who joined us 6 months ago, Dr. Cameron Davies, and other members of the team that we've been adding, both from an engineering perspective and an operations perspective, we finally got the team in place that's necessary to start delivering on this this rather unique approach to waste eradication and hydrogen creation.
Mm-hmm. Excellent stuff. Well, listen, this talking about the project, and you've signed a distribution agreement for your DMG technology into the hydrogen bus projects in Bulgaria and Romania. So this is good news, isn't it?
Well, it's tremendous news. I mean, the reality is that every major capital in the EU is looking very closely. In fact, not just every major capital in the EU. London is looking very closely at their aging diesel bus fleet. It was just announced last week, I think, that London is acquiring 23 new hydrogen fuel cell buses. And it was announced a couple of weeks ago that they were buying initially 11 fuel cell vehicles for their police force, for the Metropolitan Police Force, with an intended order of another 550 over the next 2 years. So clearly people are recognizing that utilizing hydrogen fuel cells is a mechanism by which they can eliminate diesel particulate matter, they can eliminate diesel pollutions, NOx, SOx, all of the things that are contributing to air pollution in urban areas. And so when we took a look at areas in the EU that were facing significant challenges, they're facing significant health challenges in terms of the quality of their air, the quality of their life is deteriorating, and they're looking very closely at how they replace these diesel fleets. Well, the EU has huge grant programs. They provide rebates of up to 200,000 euros for each hydrogen fuel cell bus that's purchased. And then they have literally hundreds of millions of euros earmarked for the decarbonization of public transport. And what that means to an investor is that you get money for free to help make the world a better place. So the decarbonization of the public transport sector means that we get grant money to build out our distributed modular gasification hydrogen filling stations that we can then the benefits of which we can pass on to our investors, and the benefits of which, of course, we pass on to the community in terms of generating hydrogen from waste and fueling their bus fleets and eradicating this horrific pall that's in the air of literally almost every major EU city. So we focused on Romania and Bulgaria because we have a very strong relationship with a company in Romania that has been working for the last 15 years on a variety of renewable energy projects, and who's participated in the writing of 120 million euros worth of EU grants. And so, in addition to being a tremendous project development partner and a project identification partner, this person and his company are extremely well-versed in acquiring EU grant money. And Powerhouse is a company that has never taken a dime from the government. And we pride ourselves in the fact that we've got a commercial endeavor that operates irregardless of government subsidy or anything of that nature. We've never modeled a project to include rocks or CFDs or anything, any of those things. What we've looked at is, how does the company stand on its own two feet? Well, the company stands on its own two feet by virtue of the fact that hydrogen is a success, is a highly successful retail commodity, and it's growing dramatically. The demand for hydrogen has started on on its way up the J curve. The demand for electricity is continuing to grow, and the demand for electricity in a distributed manner is continuing to grow. So the company is profitable from day one of delivering a distributed modular gasification unit. We can be making money immediately. And so as we move into Eastern Europe, we'll be making money immediately, and we'll be able to contribute to providing turnkey solutions for the decarbonization of their public transport. And we'll gratefully accept EU support in that mechanism, which will only continue to help our shareholders, as that money is totally non-dilutive and allows us to deliver far more rapidly.
So how does this work in effect? So this company that you've hooked up with here for this distribution agreement is called Tresol Biofuels. So they will apply for the grant, and how does it work from there?
Well, it's a joint venture. It's really an SPV or an SPC that's going to be applying for the grant. So Powerhouse is providing the technology. We're the technology licensor to the SPV. So we would be receiving a technology license coupled with our portion of ownership of that SPV. And currently it is anticipated that portion of ownership is going to be something in the neighborhood of 51% in conjunction with our project development partners, Wastetricity, who brought the Wrightbus relationship to the fore. Mm-hmm. Wrightbus is a major manufacturer of buses worldwide. with a significant focus on providing hydrogen fuel cell vehicles, and the early adopters of hydrogen fuel cell technology are going to be public transport and industrial transport, heavy gross vehicles, refuse trucks, things of that nature. Before we start seeing mass distribution of consumer vehicles, mm-hmm. But back to how that works. So the SPV then would be effectively applying for EU grants in particular areas. We've identified a half dozen, in addition to Sofia and Bucharest, Sofia in Bulgaria and Bucharest, Romania. We've identified another half dozen cities in whom we have excellent contacts who are extremely interested in moving in this direction and have never had the expertise to help them achieve. And in fact, in all of these areas, the EU is highly focused. And in fact, they're so highly focused that they're threatening to take these cities and these regions into court to force them to deal with their air pollution issues. I mean, it's estimated something like 410,000 additional people are dying in these areas every year because of air pollution. And that's particulate pollution. That's stuff that's being generated from diesel buses. And so so our ability to make a significant impact and to have non-dilutive government support from the EU looks extremely positive. We've been working on this relationship in the background for a number of months, and we're actually in the third phase of applying for participation in some relatively intriguing and very large grants in the tens of millions of euros range.
Excellent. And how long do you think these take normally, these grants to apply for and get result or an answer on them?
Really, they take anywhere from 3 to 9 months.
Okay.
Sometimes they'll take up to a year, but the reality is these guys are not fooling around. They realize that the time for fooling around is past, and that, yeah. You know, that they've got to get solutions and they've got to get results quickly. Mm-hmm. And so they're looking at funding things like feasibility studies, funding things like bankability projects, demonstration projects, and bankability projects that allow things to progress very rapidly and then move into kind of the joint public public-private partnership arena, which is where the SPV comes into play. You know, this is we've identified the SPV as the vehicle by which we're going to be funding and ring-fencing every one of our commercial projects. Moving forward, some of those SPVs are going to be wholly owned by Powerhouse. Some are going to be in joint ownership with third parties who are interested in providing feedstock or land or additional investment capital. And so, in each of those cases, we're going to have a special SPV that is going to be paying Powerhouse. Powerhouse will always be paid by an SPV and will always own a share of any SPVs in which we're operating. And those SPVs will be wholly non-dilutive to the PHE shareholders. So it's a tremendous opportunity. And what people really have to focus on, Justin, is that we're not looking at gee, what are the profits out of our first unit, or what are the profits out of our second or third unit? The fact is that when we complete our first commercial unit at the end of 2018, we will then be able to complete hundreds more over the next several years. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's where the annuity streams begin to build. And that's where you start seeing the legitimate acceleration of the growth of capital. So it's an exciting time to be where we are, and it's an exciting place to be.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And last bit of news, of late, you've raised £900,000. What's it going to be used for, Keith? And how long do you think this will last you?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, the fact is it'll last us at least over the next 12 months. We started this process we started this process because we recognized that there was this overhang of unplaced stock out there in with the Hillgrove note. So there were 64 million shares that had yet to be placed from the convertible note that Hillgrove had provided us over the last few years to keep operations moving forward. And we thought to ourselves, look, we just want to get rid of those shares or get those shares out into the market, give Hillgrove its cash, and then we wanted to be able to move forward kind of with free air in front of us. Mm-hmm. And so this fundraising brings us somewhere in the neighborhood of £750,000, which is more than adequate for our general operations as we're moving forward. As I say, we're going to be funding our commercial facility through a special SPV, and we're in fine shape financially. We're not in a rush to raise money again. What we're in a rush to do is to continue to make substantive progress as we have been in the completion of our entire system design. We're working not only with our own internal engineering team and our appointed engineers, Engsolve, but we're also now working with one of the world's largest engineering procurement, construction, and fabrication providers. And these guys are legitimately world class, and they're actually working alongside of us because they recognize that this is something that can roll out on a global scale, and they want to be part of it. Mm-hmm. So it's not something that can roll out on a global scale; it's something that is going to roll out on a global scale, and frankly, everybody should be part of it. One last thing I want to mention before we go, though, Justin, is that I'm going to be making a couple of presentations this weekend at the UK Investor Show. Mm-hmm. And I invite anyone listening to come on out there. We will be there. I'll be there. A number of members of staff will be there to answer any questions, any interested parties or any of our shareholders would like to ask.
Excellent stuff. Well, one final thing from me, Keith.
As always.
Three quick reasons. Yeah. Someone's listening to this right now, likes the sound of it, not following you yet. Three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
The hydrogen fuel cell is going to legitimately change the world. There's been research lately saying there's absolutely no way that we can exploit battery-powered vehicles the way that was originally envisioned because the electrical infrastructure doesn't exist there. So if you have a hydrogen fuel cell that allows you to create electricity on board your vehicle, all of a sudden that's a game changer. That hydrogen fuel cell only works if there's an inexpensive source of hydrogen. We are the world's least expensive source of hydrogen. We're the only company that can produce hydrogen from waste products and get paid for taking that feedstock and converting it and extracting the hydrogen, squeezing the last drop of hydrogen out of every component of the waste. And we're in a position where we have a team that is driving us forward on a commercial path with all of the market drivers driving in the same direction. We finally got a wind at our back.
Marvelous stuff, Keith. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
I look forward to it, Justin. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of financialorbit.com. You're right, Chris.
Hello, Justin. Good morning. Yeah, very good, thank you. Warmest day of the year.
Nice.
And it's all kicking off in terms of share prices and excitement. My goodness.
Yeah, I think it's odd how the markets seem to be thawing, you know, with the weather. And I think it's something to do with Trump, obviously. I mean, we've not heard a lot about trade tariffs of late, and he's been over there trying to smooth the path of negotiation. I don't know he has, but the head of the FBI has, with Kim Jong-un. So it's and he's in the Far East. So you think, you know, okay, it's maybe not looking as bad. And yesterday we had that, the inflation coming down, and so we may now see the Bank of England only hiking rates once as opposed to twice this year. So maybe it's looking a bit bullish at the moment, or a bit more bullish, I should say, you know?
Yeah, well, things change, don't they? Because we're obviously seeing progressively an end to these ultra-low interest rates. And you're right, maybe the Bank of England don't ratchet up rates quite as quick. And maybe the same for the Fed in America. But it's still changing. It's still a changing backdrop. You're absolutely right on trade. You know, big uncertainty is still there. But surely they're going to do a deal. It's a lose-lose for everyone over the longer term. For me, though, it's I thought the IMF out yesterday saying about total debt levels at the highest ever point was quite striking too. It just shows you that you've always got to scrape behind the headlines, and with companies there's no free lunches. You've got to get out there and do your analytical work and get your hands dirty.
Yeah, absolutely. There's always that debt thing going on, isn't it? It's never a complete rosy picture, isn't there? And you think, well, and they're advising governments, aren't they, to sort of take action now and pay it down while the economy's strong. That's true, because if we go into a downturn now and we've got this much debt, it'll be a bit worrying, won't it? You know,
absolutely. Debt's always the biggest killer for equity markets or equities. Is always debt. If you look at a share that's down 80-90%, I guarantee you, in 9 times out of 10, it's not because it's an absolutely rubbish business. It probably is not a great business, but it's because it's got debt, and that's always the killer. Which of course is a nice segue to old retail name, Debenhams, which is again on the headlines today.
I saw the headlines. I haven't looked at the chart though. So how's it looking? Is it brutal?
It was down 10% when I last looked. So shares are just north of 20 pence. Yeah. And suffice to say, you look at the chart over any reasonable time period, and you think to yourself, this is either one to short or one to avoid. You know, the trouble, I think we talked about it before. Debenhams, you wouldn't create it probably if you were starting from scratch. A bit like Woolworths.
Spot on. That's spot on. Yeah, exactly. It's a legacy store, isn't it?
Precisely. And you know, they're okay. I mean, I've been in them once in a while and they're okay, but they're just not compelling. And the trouble is, in today's world, you need compelling opportunities in order to get people to open up their wallets and purses. So the trouble is, you know, look at the numbers today. Pretty much everything went wrong. Sales were down. They blamed the weather. Clearly, they had a few problems, particularly after Christmas with the sales period. But since then, it hasn't been any easier. And they're undoubtedly forecasting a difficult year. The CFO, Chief Financial Officer, decided to move on to Selfridges, which I think says everything. Because clearly, Selfridges is a much, much more aspirational, better proportioned store. And is consequently a much more attractive place to be the CFO of, no doubt. Yeah. So you've got loads of issues here. They're trying to do a turnaround. But frankly, my view, if you're an equity shareholder, why, number one? And number two, if you still are or desperate to look for a bargain, I think you'll find the bargain at Debenhams rather than in Debenhams shares. That's my gut feel.
Yeah, and that, I mean, and there's a standout figure. If anyone hasn't seen the figures, I think half-year reported profit before tax is 13.5 million. Yeah. Last year, it was 87. That's 84.6% drop in reported pre-tax profit. That's a big slump, isn't
it? That's right. And they've put their estimates down towards the lower end of the range. Obviously, these are after pulling them down after the shabby Christmas trading period. So it's not good. And when you've got debt, and you know, you look at the company, and it's much, in its debt is a much bigger proportion of its EV than its market cap. So debt is all important here. What it smacks of is the need for a money raising, a debt restructuring, or something. They're fortunate that they do have some freehold property, but not that much. And as a consequence, it's not really a property play, I wouldn't suggest. I think it's one where you've got to take the view, do you believe they will recover to some extent or not? And the reality is, Debenhams has had these crazy cycles for quite a few years now, you know, a two or three economic cycles. And I think, frankly, this one is its worst yet. I would say there are far easier things to doing. If you want to buy retail, etc., you know, there are far easier names to be buying, which are also cheap, but just don't have debt and probably have much better prospects.
Yeah, well someone, do you know what, I did tweet out earlier about this company, and someone said that's the next one to go into administration. Do you think that's the case?
I don't think so, no. I think this is not quite as terminal as some of those other sort of names that we've seen, you know, the Woolworths or other stuff in more recent years and months. I think what you'll just get here is an acknowledgement that the equity value is very compressed, and that really who owns it are the bondholders and the debt holders. And as I say, that's why debt is always the biggest killer of equity value, because equity is always about hope. So I think that's your risk here. Some kind of debt for equity swap or some kind of rights issue which is dilutive for current equity shareholders. That's why I think the shares have been so poor over the last few years, and obviously that pace has accelerated as a decline in the last few months.
Marvellous. Anything else you're looking at, Chris?
Well, got to have a quick touch on Sky. Mm-hmm. Because of course they've captured a couple of bids in the last few months, one from their parent, and then another one from Comcast, another big US media entity. Obviously, Sky's got a significant shareholding by 21st Century Fox, mm-hmm. who are in the process of selling assets to Disney, all very complex. So basically, Sky is a wanted asset. But my view here has always been that the top bid for Sky is 1,250 pence. The shares have been trading above 13 quid for a while and remain above that level today. I think people, if you've got the shares, you've been lucky to get into a bid situation, cash out now, because the share price is anticipating a further bid. And I'm not sure that's coming, to be brutally honest. Or at least if it is, it gets a lot messier. Maybe other shares are included. It's not just cash. So my view would be, if you're a Sky shareholder, take your profits and run. Numbers today were absolutely fine. They're pushing forward their business. But the key point is, where ultimately is their ownership going to be? And my guess is it will be with the Disney franchise ultimately. And as I say, those guys, I don't think they're going to pay 13 quid a share for the company.
Yeah, okay. What was the top bid?
So the top bid was 1,250 pence from Comcast.
Yeah.
So that top, the I think it was 1,075 pence bid from 21st Century Fox, who ultimately will sell the asset to Disney as part of an asset restructuring. So, you know, you've done very well. And, you know, Sky shares were sub 10 quid for a long time. And certainly that's when I got interested in them. But at prevailing share prices, yeah, I think you absolutely chill with them. I think, frankly, they're a bit over the top.
Yeah.
A bit like, actually, I'll tell you another FTSE name that's a bit over the top that's come out today with numbers, and that's Unilever. I mean, you know, big old brands, and it's the warmest day of the year, and no doubt we'll all be having a Unilever ice cream, you know, Magnum or something else later on. Obviously, other ice creams are available. But the reality is that ever since they not only turned down that Kraft Heinz bid a year or so ago, but also announced that they're moving to Rotterdam, their domicile, and not have this kind of dual listed structure. And that will mean they will fall out the FTSE 100, I think, in due course. I just don't think there's any rationale for buying the shares. They're not particularly cheap either. You know, high teens multiple, that's not cheap in my view. Sure, they've pushed the dividend up a little bit further today, but there's no pricing power in their business. I think it looks expensive. I think this one goes sub 35 quid. There's a bit more support around there, and I think that's another level you look at it. But that's 10% below where we are today.
Yeah, and it's in a downtrend, you know, and it doesn't show any signs of breaking that. Like today, the shares are down a bit, aren't they? So, yeah, it needs something strong to get this going back upwards. So,
it needs something stronger than Magnum ice cream, I think, but yeah. Not sure they sell that. I think their personal beauty and food business is not going to give you anything of particular strength to solidify up your hopes as the share tumbles. So there you go.
Marvellous. Is that it, Chris? Anything else?
One quick other one.
Go on.
Ultra Electronics. Obviously, defence name, clever company. They've announced today an SFO, Serious Fraud Office, inquiry, which they are collaborating with. And actually, they did tell them about some issues that they found in one of their businesses themselves. Shares came off on that. No doubt, no surprise there. I would say with this one, if I recall, there's big support around 1,300 pence. If you look at the chart over recent months, that's probably a level to be looking at it again. Whenever there's a SFO inquiry or whatever, you sort of tend to box a bit shy of a share because you never quite know what's going to happen, what they're going to find. But at least the company sort of are talking to the Serious Fraud Office themselves, which is a good thing. That's what you want to see. You want to see a company getting involved. Perhaps they've come across a bad egg in their business and they want to tell people about it. So I applaud them at that level, but I would want more info before I bought the shares. But 1,300 pence is the flag level for this one if you take a look at the charts.
Well, do you know what? I'd suggest even lower than that, because at the moment they're 1,284 and there's
Oh, there you go.
There's a spike down. Do you know what? If you look back like in November, it's yes. Support around 1145, 1140.
There you go.
There's a spike down to about 1190, so maybe even get down below 12. You never know. It's a wait and see stock anyway.
Even that shows you. I mean, literally, I looked at the share price 10-15 minutes ago before I came on to do the podcast here for you. That shows you that the share is clearly volatile, so clearly people are uncertain. So yeah, the main advice is err on the side of caution with this one until you get a bit more info. As you saw with other names, probably more serious names like Petrofac, which has recovered a bit, but if you take it in the context of where it was before any of the, you know, alleged things came out on it, you know, the share's still 2-3 quid below those levels. Yeah. And that's despite an improving oil services market.
And that's the old thing, the old adage, isn't it? Uncertainty. You know, it's not a good time to invest. When no one knows what the outcome is going to be, you're better off sitting on the sidelines for a while, or you can take a gamble. And that's what it is, a gamble, isn't it?
That's right. And to be honest, I always find, you know, you take a gamble, sometimes it works and you feel very smart. But actually, the smart money, the experienced money, they wait for events. And then when an event occurs, and actually the market hasn't immediately anticipated just how good this event is in terms of the share price impact, that's when you go in. And your risk reward is much better in that sort of scenario. So for this one, I would wait for when the SFO have actually said something a little bit firmer, and maybe the shares recovered a touch, but you'll go in with much more certainty.
Marvellous. Chris, good to chat to you, and we'll speak next week.
Sounds a plan. See you soon.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are as follows. At five, Echo Energy. Ticker there is Echo. At four, I don't know why I do that every time. It's the worst gag in the world. I still do it. That's because I'm an idiot. At four, Valix. It's VAL ticker. At three, C4X Discovery, C4XD. At two, Phalanx Group, FLX. Number one, it's Immu Pharma, IMM. Of course, I had Tim on the podcast yesterday. And C4X Discovery, still up there, been followed highly in the last couple of weeks. All right, your top five most liked RNSs. They are as follows. At five, Frontera Resources, Dino 2 update, completion of drilling. At four, Codal Minerals, update on exploration program at the Borgoni project. Yes, looking good, progressing. They are heading towards defining a JORC resource there for their lithium. And they're doing lots of drilling. At three, Motive Bio, new Iclaprim data being presented at ECCMID 2018. And at one, it's Valrix, VAL, Genis and VAL 101 update. And it looks very positive, that update, by the way. Now, that's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.